right. Thank you for coming to this session, Human Trafficking in Zion. All right. We ask that all cell phones be turned off and that those attending will be respectful and attentive. It is a mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk. It is 60 minutes long, and we'd like to allow some time for questions and answers if available. We're excited to hear from Stephen, so we'll just let him kind of drive the way that this presentation goes, but it's nice to have some time for questions up there if you'd like. 15 years ago, for 9 months, Stephen Fales turned to sex work in New York City in order to pay child support. Using personal stories from this time and data from organizations such as Truckers Against Trafficking, Stephen will show how Mormons remain mostly ignorant of human trafficking in Zion and what we can do to stop it. And I just met Stephen a few minutes ago, but I'm excited to hear about his story and his background. So,
good morning, brothers and sisters. I'm Stephen Fales, and it's really great to be here. I just took the shuttle up from St. George, Utah, stayed in Motel 6 last night, got on the tracks. Here I am. I go right to editing a film right after this, so I won't be around to be at other presentations today. I'm in the midst of writing a new book. I have a show I just did at the Hollywood Fringe Festival called Cult Model. It's about being a cultaholic. I'm obsessive cult disorder. There's not a cult I haven't tried or haven't wanted to try. So it makes life very difficult. Anyway, I'm getting ready to do that in New York City this fall. Lots of projects, a children's book, etc. But the number one thing that I'm enjoying right now is spending time with my family. My dad came back into my life last year in a way that was just miraculous, and he's a Mormon bishop. And that whole announcement that came out in November, I texted him. I said, "We are not going to let this get in the way of our progress." And my father was just released as a bishop, and about a month ago. And we spent wonderful time together up in the mountains on his horses. And about in March, I had a miraculous reconciliation with my brother James. After 8 years of alienation, we have reconciled. And so I'm spending time with him and his children. We were pulling weed yesterday all morning, and life is good. Still always challenging, but good. What I'm trying to say is I'm not as prepared as I want to be for this, and it's one of the most important things in my heart and on my mind is sex trafficking or human trafficking in Zion. I've had a little experience with this, and so I hope to bring this conversation to the table. Now that we have marriage equality, we talk about our little secrets. And I'm not so concerned about the quantity of our rights as I am about the quality of our lives. And so I'm hoping to add a little more quality to the conversation. The wave of progress is moving ahead. The rights are coming. So now it's time to live full out. And so I exist somewhere between the upper world, way up here in the celestial room, in the ceiling room. I've seen it all. I was a Mormon missionary. I rubbed shoulders with President Hinckley as a mission secretary on my mission. And then I'm also from the underworld, way down there. And so I'm here in the middle. And so one of my mottos today is meet me in the middle. I can't, the extremes have been really hard to live in. So I'm finding a balance that works for me. It's nice to see many people here that have been with me along the journey. People that were here from my first Sunstone presentation, 2001? Is that 15 years ago? So, all right. Well, let's see if I have something, professional to say. I'm grateful for this opportunity to be back at the Sunstone Symposium, or as I like to call it, the Mormon International Fringe Festival. And boy, am I a child of the fringe. I have played fringe festivals all over the world, from Edinburgh to New York to Hollywood. There is no fringe quite like the Mormon fringe. Thank you, Sunstone, for having me back. This is where my solo play Confessions of a Mormon Boy began, my storytelling journey at the 2001 Sunstone Symposium. I have given other presentations here of the performing arts variety. It's a great place to try out new material without too much at stake. Unless your career is meant to only feed off the Wasatch Front, but that's being mean. Still, being able to introduce topics with audiences that are smart and full of heart and completely get the Mormon thing is a Mormon artist's dream come true. I like to say I may no longer be a Latter-day Saint, but something about me will always be Mormon. I'm a son of the Utah pioneers, and you can't take that away from me. Other than attending music and the spoken word from time to time, it's nice to have a place where this heretic can completely be at home in his own oxy-Mormon skin. I'm not an academic, per se, but when your step-grandfather is Hartman Rector Jr., whose son, Daniel Rector, my step-uncle, was once Sunstone's editor, and Carolyn Pearson is one of the grandmothers of my children, Sunstone is in my blood. It's the family business. I get that strand. Okay, so any critical thinking I get from my father, who is a doctor and was just released as a bishop in Las Vegas. Any charisma I have is from my mother and my ex-wife. I do have an undergraduate degree from Brigham Young University, a BFA, after training at the Boston Conservatory, and a master's degree from the University of Connecticut. I earned those myself. But I also have an honorary degree from the School of Hard Knocks. I do not have a PhD from the School of Hard Knocks. In fact, me telling my story, I don't want to insult the people that have stories worse than mine. My story is not remarkable. What might be extraordinary is that I have been given some tools to articulate what I've been through. And that's all I'm really trying to do. All we have to change the world is our story. And there are two kinds of stories. There's the victim story, and then there's the survivor overcoming story. Overcoming the demons without and the demons within. And that is the hero's journey. So, I've never had a gun to my head to make me get married or to get involved in the sex industry. Never had a knife to my throat. I don't have brands or tattoos from any pimps controlling me. It seems that I had an element of free will to some of my circumstances. It appears I had an element of choice in many of my decisions. I've tried to take responsibility for my actions. Accountability is not a PC word these days. What is the truth? But what is the truth behind the truth is my big question. Even in politics. I'm in the middle. I'm non-affiliated with any party. So I could see why people would not want to vote for Trump and not want to vote for Hillary. So, I'm in this independent place because I'm stuck in this thing. Like, what's the truth behind the truth? What are the real motivations? So it's this morass I live in. So, it's very hard to uncover the truth if you consider yourself a victim. And I prefer to call myself a survivor. Being a victim isn't very sexy. As I've told my story around the world, I have learned more about a topic that has become more and more timely than ever. So I got introduced to this word, human trafficking. And it helped me to re-look at my story. Because I would just want to take all the responsibility for going into prostitution, da, 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 da. But there's a thing out there called human trafficking. And human trafficking is sex trafficking. 75% of all people human trafficked are for exploitation for sex and commercial sex. So when we're talking about human trafficking, it's not just the laborers. And it's not just happening out there in the other countries. It's happening right here in our own backyard. So I want to talk about some things today about the link between how you go from being in this cult of perfection and being this perfect Mormon boy and doing everything you can. And then it seems like overnight, oh, he, you know what Carolyn Pearson's son got into. You know, he just wasn't very strong, was he? Sorry to name drop. But that's also part of my story and why it was hard for me. So let me tell you what happened. I did all this therapy to be straight. I mean, I studied with the best. Joseph Nicolosi of the National Association of Research and Therapy of Homosexuality, all of his other therapists on the East Coast was involved in all. I mean, I can go on. You can look me up on Tyra. I mean, I told a lot of that stuff, right? And so I married a woman who I told her that I was gay, and we thought we could write a different parents for a story from her parents, and we went into it with full gusto, and I couldn't keep up with it the whole time. So I came out. It was pretty quick. And that story is pretty detailed in Confessions of a Mormon Boy. I will go into more detail in my new book called Oxymormon Memoirs, The Journey of an Off-Broadway Dad. So I've written other plays that follow up called Missionary Position. That's when I wore the sacred green fig-leafed apron, you know, in my show. And my 19-year-old self lets my gay self have it. And it was a little too much for Utah in 2008. But thanks to Glenn Tyler or Tyler Glenn, whatever his name is, I feel like I'm just vanilla. I'm vanilla. And then came Prodigal Dad, which is my journey through the Utah legal system. Anyway, I digress. So I've written extensively, so I'm just going to try to hit the bullet points. So when I got excommunicated, I came clean because I'm not a good actor off stage. I just can't. I can't keep up any kind of lies, so I came clean, and I turned myself in, and it was a spiritual lynching right from the beginning, and so I was formally excommunicated in a church court for the practice actually for homosexuality, so I was excommunicated for who I am. Am I closer now? Oh. Thank you. They teach this in stand-up comedy classes. I should know this. So my excommunication is excommunication is a medieval barbaric cult tactic used to control, manipulate shame. And what happened, it initiated a banishment that happened. You know, in Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare would rather have death than banishment. That has been my experience. I was banished basically on the right and the left. My family disowned me, basically. Some tried to be nice, but when you do not exist spiritually, you do not exist in mortality. So you become padre non grata, father non grata. So it was brutal, and it was a psychic, I think I had a psychic break. So all of my identities were taken away at one time. My Mormon identity, even though I had been thinking it when I was getting my MFA at the University of Connecticut. Did I mention that degree? Yeah, I did. Anyway, not that it matters. I mean, it was in acting, whatever that is. So, it was fragmenting to be excommunicated. And it initiated my divorce. And I was manipulated out of custody of my children. I didn't know what I was giving away. And when I no longer became a legal guardian or custodian, my father title was taken. So not really a father, legally. I have no rights to my children. Constitutional rights, right? I belong to the father's rights movement. Today we have 50-50. That's the norm around the country. That's what's happening. So I think my ex-wife probably did what she thought was best. But when you don't have your children in your life or that piece of paper, it takes the wind out of your sails. And so you're not really a dad anymore. You're not a Mormon anymore. You're not a husband anymore. You're not really a family member anymore. And so you become vulnerable. And there is a link between banishment and then the vulnerability and the sex trafficking that's over here. So I'm really concerned that we are always blaming the Mormon church two-dimensionally for all our problems. There is stuff over here far bigger than what the Mormons are doing. But they do have a piece. They set you up in this cult of perfection, these impossible standards of purity. You've, and like what I had done to get excommunication was nothing compared to what would lie in front and to all the straight members of my family who keep their church memberships just because they can say the golden plates were real. And I actually couldn't say that anymore myself. So it was a frustrating time. So also, I had no place to live anymore because I gave her the house. So I was basically became top shelf homeless. And that's how I've basically been living for the last 15 years. And you're paying child support. And so things are going, and the other thing I had was so much anger, but I kept smiling, right? I didn't want anyone to really see this. And I also been trained my whole life to be nice and say yes. And here I am so angry inside, and I've lost everything. So I moved to New York City because all I had left were my dreams. Is that better? All I had left were my dreams. I'm trying to shout like Bernie Sanders, I think. All I had left were my dreams. So I went to New York and found myself in a situation where I moved there probably too soon. But here's the thing. People kind of just wanted me to go. You know, a ticket to go to New York was offered. I remember an uncle-in-law giving me $250. And you would think that that's a wonderful gift. But as I look back on it, I was being paid to go away. So I got to New York. I got my agent that I'd been wooing for years. I got my waiting job. And that night, I had an appointment with a top pimp in New York City, the A-list agency. So all of this is going into, you know, it's more in detail in my story. So I want to talk about this grooming process, though, because I had been groomed to have that appointment for a long time. So I need to backtrack a little and just say that I grew up in Vegas, where sex work is in the water, right? Or all of that. When I got off my mission, I was working out with my aunt. She's 4 years older, and she was like a big sister. And she said, "Stephen, you know, you're really hot." And like, I'm 21, right? Skinny. But she says, "If you ever got into trouble, you can make a lot of money dancing, right?" So it was partly my family. Now, what happened to her? See, this is the spiritual abuse, the link between spiritual abuse and religious violence. So my Aunt Brooke was about 16 when her mother died. She came from a very wealthy family, but she was the 10th, and she was forgotten. She had some problems, and she was cross-eyed, and she wasn't perfect, and she was a woman in a very patriarchal family, and she went into survival mode. There's this survival thing that a lot of sex workers do. You know, if you're hot, young, and smart, you're not just going to kill yourself. You're going to do the slow, steady suicide to survive. And that's what I'm concerned that so many people in our LGBT community are happening today, right? Also, I just want to bring up, and I'm just throwing these things out, kind of speaking randomly, because, you know, I have a lot of notes, but I just want to pull up some things. If this helps and brings up some conversation, that would be great. So I'm concerned today about suicide contagion, the way we talk about it. It really becomes seems to become a real option, right? And we have Lady Gaga, who, when she first came on the scene, she's going to be the Messiah. I'm going to save you all from this, and tell me about your suicide. I'm going to do a song, and I'm going to put it up there, and I'm going to tell your name. I'm going to show everyone that you killed yourself, and you were my little monster. And she didn't mean to do this, but she has stopped doing that. because it's part of the suicide contagion. There is a self-pity in this valley that is so thick. I have never seen it thicker anywhere in the world. I have played every gay ghetto in this country. And Salt Lake City has got this self-pity. Oh, my gosh. And it's just like, and we stroke it, and we stroke it. I may be guilty inadvertently of sex work contagion. I never wanted anybody to go into it. And as I have talked about it, I hope they see the play and see the crash and see this hairpiece come off at the end of the show and we get real. Man, and the hell that I went through. I don't want anybody, but if you see on the face value of my artwork, it's titillating, it's sexy. Hey, I'm in show business, I was young. You've got to get them in and exceed their expectations so that you get reviews that say, feels like a sacred gift, Boston Globe, right? So I may be guilty in some of my marketing. If I have given anybody the idea that sex work was a good option, I am so sorry. But I was introduced to sex work in the gay community. This guy I was met had been a go-go boy. This person over here had been this. You see in the back of the gay rags, all of these sex work things. It's in the water. It's everywhere you go. Oh, and then you meet these people that are in charge of HRC, and they got their little guy over here painting by the pool. And you're like, oh, is that how it works? Do you get a big sugar daddy and he's going to take care of you? Huh? Oh, and these age disparity relationships where you got your sugar daddy and it's really a transaction. And what I have learned is that my affections are the most beautiful thing I have to share with anyone. What, I'm only worth $500 an hour? My heart? My love? My dignity? My body? You can't put a price tag on my affections. I believe all sex should be for fun and for free. So I'm going to be challenging the left more than the right today. So I came across, like I'm on my mission. Oh my gosh, I'm playing the piano in Portugal there. I'm in the really great stake. And I did such good work with the members. If you can sell religion, you can sell anything. So there I am. And the patriarch of the stake slips lots of money in my pocket. That's weird. That's just weird. Plus, I think I had my own sugar daddy syndrome. You know, I grew up upper middle class in a lot of ways. So it wasn't going to be fun going to New York and not being able to have what I wanted when I wanted, right? So I have, you know, but I was desperate. I had no money. And I was determined. This is what put me over the top. I was determined to pay child support on time every month because family legend had it that my father-in-law, who I never wanted to be like, I heard all of the stories, right? I never wanted to be him because he hadn't paid child support and he had done bad things to his daughter. And I was going to let my kids go to church. And that was part of the arrangement, you know? So, I would show them the world, and I'd bring them to New York, and they would be raised in the church, and they wouldn't be marginalized here in Zion. It's a complicated thing. So what put me over the top was the money thing, but it wasn't the money. It was also the anger. And it was I had huge issues with my father. Huge issues with Dr. Perfect Bishop Cowboy Dr. Fails. You know, I could never please him. You know, I had my own daddy issues going into this. And so, you know, you're hoping to be rescued by one of these, by somebody. And you have no value anymore over in Zion. So you go there and, so in the name of child support, the plausible excuse, because I wanted to be paid on time. Because I took on all the guilt, too. It was all my fault. So, I signed up, and I met my first pimp at midnight. and he gave me, you know, it was a seductive speech. You know, everyone's a prostitute at one time or another. Do you think everyone likes their job? Even housewives put out for security. They're just paying for your time, remember? And furthermore, temple hookers were often considered sacred and holy in ancient times. So there's all these, you know, and you're desperate, and I'm totally sober, you know? And I'd been raised to be nice and say yes, and I needed money, and I was emotionally probably underdeveloped for the world. You know, I had degrees, but I wasn't ready for what was about to hit New York City, right? I think New York is fueled on vodka and sex work. Lubricated, that is. There's so much going on there. They're good things, too. So I'm sorry if this is overwhelming you with, you know, too much specifics, but I... So I want to say that my aunt had planted that seed in me at 21. And at 30. And let me tell you, I looked 22. I mean, it was flawless. I had my youth, my teeth, you know, and this wonderful hairpiece. And I got sucked in. And there's something about getting paid that first time. It's so exhilarating and so dehumanizing at the same time. And I started using my smile, and I got sucked in, and I was trapped. So there was a grooming process. It's in our culture. You know, oh, also in Young Ambassadors at BYU. Our choreographer had been rumored to have been doing tricks at earlier on, before he came to BYU and became straight. And then another president of BYU Young Ambassadors had been married, came out, and became a porn star, right? So you're hearing about all of this that is actually going on, right? And my ex-wife had been roommates with a guy who had been this same prostitute. And I don't like to use that word too much. So there's an element of choice. I went in, but I was also sucked in. So that's what I want to say. I was a target. It was so vulnerable. I didn't have really a place to live. I had a sublet for a month, right? So I was almost homeless, and I was hungry. I came to New York with $60 in my pocket. And my family didn't believe in me being in the chorus of Les Mis was very important. They, you know, my other brother's an attorney, and my other's a big shot. You know, what I did wasn't of value, right? So, at that time. Now my brother James thinks he loves my work. I'm like, wow, really? Really? There's nothing like getting rave reviews, but it's wonderful when your family goes, hey, that was really great. So that's one of the big changes for me. So I just want to say that many stories are worse than mine, but there is this common thread of the grooming process. And I do see the sex industry as a huge, multi-billion dollar cult. And they get you when you're vulnerable, and that's what a good cult will do. You know, we're going to change your life. And at first, your life gets so huge and big in any cult, right? You got new language and new fellowship and new people. But there comes a point when you hit that cult ceiling, ow, and your world gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And you know you've got to change. And I knew I needed to change when I saw Moulin Rouge. And I saw Nicole Kidman up there as a courtesan. And she says, someday I'll fly away, leave all this to yesterday. And she wanted to be a real actress. But people are going to know about my sex work secret someday. I'm stuck. I can't get out. I cannot get out of this. And I had this double life, and I'm making all this money, and I'm flying my kids back and forth, and then my mother, she doesn't ask where this money's coming from. See, that's the thing. We just kind of turn our backs, and we don't ask what's going on. Because we don't want to know. Because those trips are really fun. I spent a lot of money on her. Anyway, God bless her. And a lot of money on my kids. So I'm just giving you a taste of what it was. So I saw Nicole Kidman up there, and she looks so much like my ex-wife, and I'm just like, and Nicole Kidman is up there dying. And Nicole Kidman has no power, freedom, or full self-expression. She has none of those bohemian values that all those people in France are fighting for. She is stuck, and she's not available for love, and I wanted love. But who's going to take me now? And I realized these were all transactions going on. So I had I was sober through these calls, and then the drugs come in. And these guys are medicating, and there, a lot of them are in denial, right? So that their life is trapped. So that night I had a huge binge, and then I decided I'm going to change it. And then I decided to change everything. And I was going to write that show about my excommunication, because I knew that there were other people getting excommunicated, and who's going to articulate what it's like to be in a church court, right? Some ally who has never been excommunicated? No. Tag, I'm it. So, how did I get out? I'm like, I reached out to a family member, my Uncle John, who had sat outside my church court, and I told him what I was doing, and he was world wise, and he's like, it's going to be okay, Stephen. And he sent me $1,500. Now, my rent was $2,000 a month. This four-bedroom, you know, thing. I was paying cash. My landlord didn't want to know where that cash was coming from. Paying cash? Yeah. And I called my professors from the University of Connecticut, and I said, I want to write this play. And I wanted to buy just 1 month. 1 month to write a play to get me out of the gutter. So I did. And I turned my thing into a B&B, Airbnb kind of thing, and things are starting to happen, and I'm feeling good, and I'm dating some guys, and then 9/11 hit. 9/11 hit. And then I got really scared. See, a lot of this, my triggers were fear, and my father wasn't helping. My father was to blame for everything. So 9/11 happened, and I called that agency again, and they took me back in a New York minute. And then some friends, as I'm getting ready to do the show about excommunication in Salt Lake at the Rose Wagner, I booked it on pure faith. I had to come up with the script. And 9/11 really was a wrench in my plans. So these friends called, and they said, we want you to do this course. It's called the Landmark Forum. That'd get great. There's not a cult I haven't tried, right? So I went and took this course in New York. And it transformed my life. I knew going into these, my family had done all of these before. I was going to go in there. I was never, ever, 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 ever going to share. But I had this racket going on. I learned so many things. I learned that I'm not my past. And I came clean about it all. And I wanted a new life. And I threw my hairpiece off at the end of that. And the completion night, and I had all these guys coming up to me, you know, I'm stuck in the sex work thing too, and I'm stuck too, and I can't believe you're talking about this, you know. So life, I have to minimize it because they can't go into how profound that experience was for me. But I never went back to sex work or escorting again. And I started to become a survivor of top shelf human trafficking. I have two Mormon cousins who killed themselves. Sex work was in their stories. I have survived. I have seen so many people kill themselves, not just because they were gay, but because they got stuck in the trenches. So it's too simplistic to say, oh, this proclamation came out in November, and now we have all these suicides. Or we spilled the beans again in November. Now, we've got to get into the stories of the people and what's happening. When the homeless are there on the street, these kids are vulnerable for the human trafficking, and it takes away their dignity. They don't think, you know, they've all done that chewing gum thing, you know, where they're, the, you know, where they're damaged goods, and they chewed the gum and Maya Maids or whatever that is, or all these things. And the other thing is, we don't talk about this in the gay community because it is a rite of passage, actually. It's been set up. We need to break that up. We need to be very careful that our compassion is not actually enabling. Oh, but I give them all this money, and it's, you know, there's no victims here. It's not a victimless. It's not even a crime. I mean, really. I mean, just tossing these things out to think about. I would like you to look very hard at the leaders in the LGBT community in Salt Lake City, and ask yourself, in your heart, how many of them are paying for sex after this gala? I don't need Equality Utah to sell me a ticket to anything. I'm calling out the left. For their part in the suicides and the destruction that is happening to our youth in Zion. There. I said it. All these notes would have been great if they were, if I had just the time. It's just too big. Vulnerable. They get you when you're vulnerable. There were times when I was tempted to go back, many times, and I was more broke than ever. I had to get out of that place that cost me $2,000 a month, right? I couldn't afford it. So I changed my lifestyle up. I went without, and I still had to pay child support somehow, because they'll throw you in jail. So you're cleaning up your life, and people aren't understanding. They just think you had a party. They just think you had a party. So I would think to myself, as I'm walking down Lexington Avenue, and I couldn't even buy the candy in this beautiful candy store. I'm wearing old Prada. I'm like, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these other things shall be added to you. So I had to go to work to reclaim my dignity. I had to go without, and I didn't make, you know, sometimes the guy would pay for dinner, right? But that's not the way, you know, it wasn't cash on the table before you walk in or after. So there are aftershocks, and there are shades of sugar. And it's a, and you learn more, and you start to learn. So I started to avoid triggers, rich, powerful men who had money, right? I started to work on myself in many ways. I got involved in all the 12-step programs that you can possibly think of. AA, Crystal Meth Anonymous, Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous, Sex Workers Anonymous. I started dealing with my money issues, Business Debtors Anonymous, and Debtors Anonymous. I am no longer a 12-stepper. I learned everything I needed, but today I am cult-free. All cults have value, right? Or we wouldn't do it. But I hit the cult ceiling. Because some of the most sober AA members in this world are fantastic. They are the sex traffickers. They are the porn czars. Be careful. They are everywhere. So I get tired of getting hit on all the time. That's just one piece of it. But I went to work on that stuff, and I did all the courses in Landmark Education. I was sucked in. SCLP. So what's curious is, when I did the Landmark Forum, I remember bawling my eyes out and saying, I want to help prevent anyone from ever getting sucked into this like I did. And so I made a decision that that would be part of my mission in my life. And I was too, you're trying to start a career and you're up against directors and producers in New York who are hiring people, and your story is kind of in the face of that, and you're going along and you're just inching and inching, and then 15 years go by and you're 46 years old. And then you can really stand up and start bringing up this discussion. So I've paid some dues, and hopefully I'm not going to alienate too many people, but we've got gay marriage as the law of the land. We're on track to start with quality. So I really I knew that if I went back to sex work, my art would suffer, because I stopped and then my life. And if I would go back and finance my art through sex work, and lo and behold, this investor I know is doing that stuff, but I'm not. So it's a fine line. You're and sometimes you need a place to stay, and you deflect. You're deflecting that energy. It's very hard, I think, for these youth to find mentors that are not going to exploit them in some way and want to sleep with them in some way. So finding mentors, we need mentors. We need gay mentors that are not going to require their commodity of their youth, their beauty, that kind of thing. One other topic is they call porn a public health crisis in Utah. And I think that they're talking about, it's destroying the intimacy of my temple marriage. And, I'm objectifying people. And, and all those reasons, it could be. But I'm concerned about the public health crisis of human trafficking. Who's on the other side of the lens? Who's gotten sucked in, and drugged? So there are horrible stories out there. These girls that are... and it happens in the families and different things, but they're swept away to they're strapped to a bed there in South Dakota in an oil rig village. You hear these horrific stories, and they're right here in Utah too. So there are stories far worse than mine, but there are some parallel things here I think that are going on. And another little point I want to bring up: when I was an Eagle Scout. My project was, how do I, we were identifying the kids so they wouldn't get trafficked, right? That was my project. So I'm going to just stop telling my story a little bit and just talk about an organization called Truckers Against Trafficking. Truckers Against Trafficking are my heroes. I came across this group on Facebook. And so... I'm here just kind of talking about my story, but if you really want to get into the statistics, the organizations, the sister and brother organizations to this group, truckers are out there on the lookout for signs of trafficking, and they're bringing awareness, education, they're being the heroes in an industry that used to be notorious for exploiting people. So these guys are great, and I was just looking at their site, and I just came up I'll just read a few things. Indications of human trafficking. Inexplicable appearance of gifts, such as getting hair or nails done, clothing, electronics, or cell phones and pagers not fitting the youth situation. Young men with new cars and young men with fabulous clothes and Prada. And how can they afford that great gym membership? Wow. And how can they afford all those supplements to look like that? Presence or communication with an older girl or boyfriend. This age inappropriate stuff, man. Woo. But we have to be PC. Because they just might be truly in love. Right? If the money weren't there, he'd still stay in care. And if someone hotter than you comes along, I'm loyal to you. No little girl or boy dreams of growing up and being sexually exploited. Something goes terribly wrong along the way, or you have to be carefully taught. Where there is demand, there is supply. So Jimmy Carter just came out with this thing. You know, Amnesty International wants to decriminalize prostitution across the board, right? If we do that, we actually empower traffickers and pimps and Johns. So it's not so, we can't be so cavalier. It's a very complicated situation here. So how do we start prosecuting the Johns, take away the demand? And how do we rehabilitate the boys and the girls and the men and the women? And you know, we need to remember that it's, you know, if I could get sucked in at 30 years old, you know, these kids, but I did get sucked in at 30 years old and I needed help too. So we need to help people of all ages who are sucked in, right? How do we treat them when they come back? Was it just their fault? Gosh, you weren't listening there at that beehive class, were you? You know? You have another way? I mean, you had all those degrees, right? But I've seen so many lawyers stuck in this escorting thing as the escorts, right? It's not about degrees. I've seen rich kids who grew up it. I've seen poor kids grow up. You know, it's a universal thing. So it's out there, and these people need help once they get in. Let me tell you what happened. I was dating a guy. I started doing Confessions of a Mormon Boy, and I was doing it in San Francisco. And I would meet so many people and their stories, right? And I was dating this guy that was going to Grace Cathedral. He would go to Grace Cathedral, so I went with him one day. And I was always trying to date guys who had some kind of spiritual something going on. And he gets up to take the communion, the Eucharist, and he's like, you want to come? And I looked at him, and I said, me? Me? You don't know what I've done. In the name of child support. He said, yeah. I got up, went up to that altar, and this amazing, amazing yellow, like, sweet wine, and this real beautiful loaf of bread. I mean, a real loaf, not a wafer, right? They do it right up a Nod Hill. And it's, I think, the first time I felt a bit of worthiness. And if Mary Magdalene had been a prostitute, she and I now had a lot in common. And I began to know what grace was. And then there's the wisdom of the prophets and the wisdom of the prostitutes. I don't want either one. I just want to be somewhere in the middle. So I had many, many things. I remember my Chicago run. I made $10,000. Chris Jones, one of the best reviewers in America of the Chicago Tribune, wrote this love letter. Overnight, my show was packed. I made $10,000 with my art by myself in Chicago in January in that snow. And I got that $10,000 and I paid my child support and I went and I bought my own laptop. No sugar daddy that was giving me a check for $5,000. I bought my own laptop to keep writing. Stories and journeys like that as you get better and you get well. And then the recession hits. And you lose everything. And you discover you're HIV positive. And your wife files false allegations of child abuse. And you have no money to fight. Do you know how easy it would be to pick up that phone and pay my cell phone bill by doing a trick for an hour? We have to be careful, and it didn't happen. I'm calling every Broadway star, even casually new, to help, right? My family's not helping me, but man, in the Depression, I did not go back. Because seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all other things will be added unto you. So I had learned some things from the cult of my birth that really came to the surface, right? I say that tongue-in-cheek, kind of, sort of, well, kind of. So, you know, I've gotten stronger and stronger, but, you know, I could tell you all the things, but we need these success stories. We need people, how they reclaim their lives. And so what I have up my sleeve is called the Possibility Foundation. I guess that's why I'm here. I don't have any books for sale. But if you want to help me with it, 501c3, spread the word about something I'm doing. What I want to do is, you know, you get out of human trafficking, and there's this agency, and there's Obamacare, and you can get your CAP, your community action program, and you can go to the halfway house, and this and this and this, and all these churches are going to help you. And they're going to do this, and they're going to do this, and you're going to get your job, and you're going to do this, and da-da-da, and you're going to get your help through all these ways. Who is going to help you get your dream? That's not really living. That's just surviving. Right? They're going to help you survive. I want to help victims become survivors of human trafficking. And people who want to leave the sex industry, it's not easy. And they need scholarships to take that stand-up course. Because I knew I was going to take... I was going to talk about my excommunication and serious things. I wanted to lift it with comedy. Someone gave me a scholarship to take that course at the American Comedy Institute, right? Those professors believed in my dream and gave me money that bought me time to create a life that would really propel me. You know, you go all these 12-step groups, and you'll do the 12 steps, and you go to this, and you go to that. You want to know what keeps me sober in the morning? When I choose to be sober, it's because I have chosen my dream. Give someone their dream, and you restore their dignity. And we live in a world today where we need to be giving people their true dreams and their dignity. Pull them out of the gutter with their dreams. What you dream? I've met hookers on off the clock, and they all have dreams. Are we done at 10 or 10:15? But we want to have questions, right? 5 minutes left. Good. We'll keep the questions down. So I'd like to answer any questions. I guess that's what I'd like to say. The Possibility Foundation gives victims of human trafficking their dreams again. So if you want to know more about my story, you can get the Confessions of Mormon Boy Live from London album and just hear the thumbnail sketch. It's called Confessions of a Mormon Boy Live from London. You can just listen, and it is on iTunes. Questions?
Any questions you could come up for? Would you
yes.
come up, would you
yes.
come up to the just, microphone? Or
go ahead.
I'm just a little late. Why did your state president give
me
money?
It was a patriarch. Why did my patriarch on my mission give me money? Well, that's a good question. Why would the patriarch in the Porto, Portugal stake slip money in my pocket? Because that's the way some of these things work. Things become transactional. Love is a transaction, things like that, but I think there was an element, you know, we reward youth and beauty with little money. I don't know. It's a good question to ask. I was friends with Reverend Bishop Gene Robinson. And I'd done my show. I was doing my show in Boston. He came out to see it with his partner. He took me back to their place in New Hampshire. And there I am, somehow skinny dipping in the hot tub. How did this happen, and where is his partner? You know, I'm not used to being in a hot tub with such a good-looking guy. And you just pretend you didn't hear that. And you can't wait to get out of that hot tub. And you don't put out. But they put you on a bus so fast you can't believe it. There. I said it. I don't think I answered your question, but I hope I brought forward more questions. Other questions? Yes. What my family could have done was, when I was excommunicated, rally. You are ours. That was the thing that could have been done. And also what could have helped was, you know, the church was wrong to do that, Stephen. Right? I think that they're now starting to come along. Right? And my father, and it was a two-way street. You know, I reached out to my dad again. Oh, my gosh. You know, last year when I was in L.A., and before things got into trouble, I called my dad and I swallowed my pride and I said, "Dad, I am hungry. I'm so hungry. And I'm afraid." Your transformation will be tested. And it's a tsunami coming back. And I was seeing that it's worse than ever. Those apps, those hookup sites, they're all the portal to the underworld, where the sex work, the human trafficking, the drugs are all there, right? So my father helped me, and I asked for help, and my father has helped in little ways. He has not paid my way, but he's given you, throw me a rope. Just throw me a rope, and I'll pull myself. But please, just throw me a rope. I want to throw people their dreams. Other questions? Well, I wish it was all tidier. It's very messy and it's all in flux, but thank you for being here to hear part of my story. We all have a story. Thank you.